From Springfield, this is State Week in Review, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
We are just 3 weeks from Election Day, and tonight's debate is going to focus on issues that are very important to the African American community.
I would reform the state education funding formula so our neediest schools get more resources, and I want to move us up from 48th out of 50 states up on our state support for education. It's the most important thing we do with our tax dollars.
Governor Quinn.
My opponent just said he wants to increase state funding for education. His budget will decrease funding for state education by $4 billion. Our Constitution says the state has a primary responsibility for funding schools. I believe in that. That's why I proposed the budget that makes the biggest investment in classroom education in the history of Illinois.
Governor Quinn has cut education funding during his administration by $500 million to our schools. It's good to fund the pensions, that's important, but he has cut school funding. I will increase school funding, and I'll bring together Republicans and Democrats to get that done.
And Governor Pat Quinn, Bruce Rauner, debating in Chicago this past week. And among the topics, as they were speaking before a African-American audience and on some African-American media, but education funding was one of the topics. And we'll be talking about some of those allegations of whether school funding was cut under Quinn on today's show. Our panel includes Charlie Wheeler, Director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield, working double duty both as the control pilot of the show today and as a panelist, Brian Mackey from WUIS Illinois Issues, and our guest this week, John O'Connor of the Associated Press. John, thanks for stopping by.
Thanks for having me, Bill.
And it's actually good to see you in person. Usually you're at the state capitol, and I only get to hear your voice, not see your frightened face.
And I realize now, Bill, you definitely have a face for radio, just like I do.
Thank you very much. Whether spending on public education in Illinois has increased or decreased under Quinn has become an issue in this race for governor, that both guys were throwing out a lot of numbers, as we heard there. But Bruce Rauner says Pat Quinn cut education funding. You decided to fact check that a little bit and did some research. So we'll start with you, John O'Connor. And what did you find out on this issue?
It's a matter of whose money you count and what time period you look at. When you look at the numbers on paper, in the last year before Governor Quinn came into office, the state put $7.4 billion towards schools. This year, they have pledged $6.8. So Bruce Rauner says that's a decrease. There is less money going into schools, into classrooms, than there was in 2009, the year before Quinn took office.
And well, if you go by those dates,
and
that
if you go
is
by those
a decrease.
Dates, that is a that is definitely a decrease.
About 8% lower.
Quinn will say, however, there was a recession in 2009 and 2010, the lingering Great Recession. President Obama had just come into office and started his economic stimulus program, which sent about $1 billion to Illinois for education in 2009 and another $700 million in 2010. He says you need to segregate that money and look only at the state support given, and that would mean that you're starting with a lower number, about $6.4 billion, and now it's at $6.8 billion. So he says, over my tenure, it has increased $400 million. So this is, Rauner's point is basically there is less money. And by inference, he's criticizing Quinn for, okay, you got the stimulus money, but you didn't, when it ended, you didn't make up the shortfall. And that's a legitimate attack for a challenger. He's going to go after the numbers as they appear on paper. Now, Quinn, of course, argues that Rauner's answer is insufficient. That he is going to, Rauner says, I'm going to increase education funding, but he's not been real specific about how he's going to do it. And he wants to end this income tax increase that Quinn began, which Quinn says will cost education $4 billion a year.
And there's another angle to it also that neither of them address, and that is how do you count pension funding? Because the biggest single chunk of money that the state puts into the five retirement systems is the money that goes to the teacher's retirement system, which covers retirement costs for all public school teachers except in the city of Chicago. And during his time as governor, Quinn has made the required pension payments under a 1995 law designed to get the systems up to 90% of funding by the year 2045. And if you figure in the pension dollars and say this is part of education, and some people would argue that a teacher's pension is part of the overall compensation package and therefore should be included, then the money from the state has increased, no doubt about it.
Probably. But,
and it depends. I remember back when I was a reporter, the governors would always include the pension payment because it made it look like they were giving more to education. The education community, the lobbyists for the teachers' unions and for the school boards would always leave it out because it made it look like education was getting less money.
And that that increase has been $2 billion a year under Quinn. That's how much he's increased the pension, $1.6 billion to about $3.5 billion in a single year. And teachers especially, I've covered education for several years, and teaching is Bruce Rauner says teachers are overpaid. I've watched teachers, and I've done some research, and I've talked to experts, and teaching is a very demanding profession in the public school system, and the burnout rate for teachers in the first 5 years, there's a lot of effort going into mentoring young teachers to keep them in the system, because the burnout rate in the first 5 years is much higher than any other industry or most industries, and a good pension. It can be argued that a good pension package is part of that incentive to recruit good teachers and keep them in the system.
Well, and I would ask, where is the cost? Where is the main cost in an educational system? It's not that, the textbooks and the chalk and things like that. You have the capital, the physical infrastructure, the buildings, and the people, the teachers' aides, the school bus drivers, although a lot of that's been outsourced. But this is where a lot of the money goes. And if you don't count the pension cost, that seems kind of illogical to me, right? This is part of the cost of doing business. There are these pension laws. And one thing we haven't talked about here that kind of ties into that is what role property taxes play in this. That did come up in the debate. Governor Quinn has said that he wants to do a property tax refund. Bruce Rauner has talked a lot about freezing property taxes. Meanwhile, you have a lot of people in state government saying that schools, local school districts, ought to be picking up more of that pension cost and shifting that cost away from the state, which for downstate and many suburban school districts is picked up by the state, those pension costs right now, shifting that onto local school districts. And how are they going to absorb that if they can't raise property taxes?
Well, the whole system of education funding has been out of whack in Illinois for generations. I remember starting out as a reporter covering the Constitutional Convention. There was a big debate in the Education Committee writing the education article. Should the state pay the whole cost for education, or should it just pay the majority cost? And they ultimately settled on language that the state has the primary responsibility for funding the system of public education. Unfortunately, there was a court case in the early 70s when the appropriation wasn't sufficient to cover half the cost, primary responsibility, and the Supreme Court ruled that that was a goal and it was really not enforceable. And subsequent court cases have basically said the same thing. This is a job for the legislature to finish, to remedy, and it can't be done in the courts. And so as a result, Illinois, unlike most states, finds its local taxpayers picking up a much bigger share of the cost of public education. It's something like 56-57%. The state only contributes about a third, which is way at the bottom. And to make up the difference, there has to be an influx of revenue from somewhere. And the question is where.
There's one point that I did want to add about the the numbers, and I didn't address that in the article that is on the Associated Press wire today. But if you want to take Quinn's side of things and not count federal stimulus dollars, that's a difference. If you count stimulus dollars, then the year before he took office, education funding was $7.4 billion. If you don't count them, it's $6.4 billion. Well, then he can argue that, yes, he has increased funding. But the thing that neither side addresses is that if you want to count it that way, in the 2 years prior to that, 07 and 08, funding went up $1 billion. So if we use Quinn's $6.4 billion for that first year, that funding went down 10%. So it's you're in the middle of the Great Recession. But again, it's a matter of when you count the money, what money you're counting, and both sides have an argument, I think.
And what you have is, we have essentially, I don't want to call them a random set of dates, but we have dates that are convenient for an argument. So you look for that year that you had the federal stimulus, and so that's the year they started kind of their countdown when they were discussing this.
Sure.
Well, but that's when Quinn took office too. So
well, and Quinn argues Quinn's campaign argues that you need to look at the entire, because one point that neither side addressed and I looked at was that the fiscal year that began in July of 11, 2010-2011 school year, pardon me, was the first year without stimulus money. And the legislature and Quinn recognized that, and they put more money into education with state funding.
It was over $7 billion.
So if you want to buy that argument, again, you can say it's increased since 09 to 15, but it's decreased from 2011 to 2015. The campaign wasn't buying that. They said, no, it's unfair to do that. However, the Civic Federation came out with a report last night or 2 nights ago, I guess, that looked at that very thing, because it looks in five-year increments. It has a history of looking at numbers over 5 years. So it looked at 11 to 15, and it said the funding has dropped. Now, it did go on to say that if you look at his entire tenure, it has increased. But it made that same point. So I think that's valid to say too. It's a numbers game, and as you said, Bill, both sides can pick and choose to decide how to count them.
And it's something that in the debate formats that are often used, or in a commercial, they aren't going to parse out the detail.
Well, and that's where I would come in and say, like, does this really matter? I mean, we're having this very thorough discussion, and John did a lot of work, in looking at these numbers and parsing these timelines. But if it fits into a 30-second TV ad, the vast majority of voters in Illinois did not watch the debate. They're not going to listen to this show, unfortunately. And they're not going to, be aware of these nuances. They just hear Governor Quinn cut education funding. I'm going to increase education funding and cut your taxes and freeze property taxes. So I guess the question that I have is, does this really matter to voters? And at what point, these campaigns seem to be willing to say just about anything. I don't know that, like, even these, it seems like 10 years ago we had these fact-checking operations that would spring up and you'd try to shame the candidates into being honest. That doesn't even seem to be working anymore, because as far as I know, the Rauner campaign has not backed off this claim, despite not only John but other people, pointing out these inconsistencies in their argument. They're still repeating this.
Well, and part of it, I guess, is the assumption on the part of the campaigns that voters are either too disengaged or too stupid to realize what's going on. And maybe that's a harsh thing to say about the campaigns. Maybe they're not that cynical. But on the other hand, there's a lot of evidence to suggest that it's just like selling dog food or, lawn care products or whatever. Whatever moves the product, that's what you'll say. And I assume that people don't believe, when they see those late-night weight loss infomercials, that they don't believe that this stuff is for real. So maybe they look at it and they say, these politicians put this stuff on, and we don't believe that either.
Enough believe it that some of those make money, so I would assume enough of it sticks in the right way in this case that they do. There were other issues that came up in that debate, if we could just touch upon them quickly. from what I could tell in this debate, there wasn't really anything new or significant that emerged. But it did highlight the difference in their gun arguments, which Quinn tried to do a little more in the week to say that he would support regulations of so-called assault weapons, whereas Bruce Rauner said that he doesn't feel that is the answer. He believes the strength lies in background checks and keeping guns out of the hands of convicted felons.
I thought that was a question that Rauner never answered directly. He talked around it. He didn't say flat out.
It was implied. I did take that with some implication. You're correct there.
Yeah.
Well, and of course, Rauner is trying to appeal to suburban women. That's one of his core constituencies that he's trying to win over in this campaign. And I think that that's where a place where you need to tread carefully on gun issues. That is the mythical swing voter, right? But I mean, there are people out there for whom that is important who might be inclined to support him. If he was, say, the Bruce Rauner of the primary, who was talking about how he loved hunting and fishing and all that stuff, and you know, with his family shotgun and things like that, then that might be a different person who's portraying himself to the voters. But here he is. This is another issue where he's trying not to pin himself down and trying to remain as vague as possible.
And if you think about it, in the primary, he was selling himself to basically a different bunch of potential buyers, a bunch that would be a lot more conservative, a lot more concerned about Second Amendment rights than the state as a whole. Now he's out trying to sell himself to a broader audience, and so he has to be very careful what he says so that he doesn't alienate some of the people who assume that he was on their side back in March by saying the kind of things that would maybe bring over some of the swing voters that you were mentioning, while at the same time alienating the core. So that's always the difficulty for politicians in Illinois. You run in your primary and you have to appeal to a narrower fringe, then you have to move to the middle to try and win over the general electorate.
You mentioned a different set of buyers. In a way, I guess this debate in some respects was aimed at a different set of buyers in that they specifically said that it was focused on African American issues. It was on the CBS TV affiliate there, but on an African American radio station and with more African American questions. Charlie, with that perspective, was there anything that you pulled away that they really need this African American vote on both sides to be successful or to win?
Well, I thought overall the questions tended to deal with issues that are important to the urban area. That whole gun control thing, that's a much hotter issue in Chicago and in the neighborhoods that are being torn apart by this gun violence than it would be, say, in Springfield or Carbondale or Macomb or somewhere. So that was the audience that they were geared at, and they talked about jobs, and they talked about, Quinn touted some of the things that his administration has done to try and improve educational opportunities, social programs in the depressed communities. Rauner talked about how what we need is to provide more economic opportunities. So in that sense, the message from both of them was pretty much the same as to what their goals would be, I thought.
And on guns, Pat Quinn, it's a no-lose issue for him because despite saying that he wants to limit assault-style weapons, it won't pass the legislature. Even a Democratic-controlled legislature, some of the more liberal members of the Senate, Dan Katowski and Antonio Munoz, have tried to move assault weapon bans, and they've not even gotten out of committee. I think the last time they didn't even call for a committee vote, and that shows you that legislation of that type just isn't going to sell. And so even Chicago, I'm not sure that, you know, Chicagoans are very concerned about neighborhood violence and gun violence, but I'm not sure if they are concerned, you know, I don't think they see
they realistically
AK-47s,
think this will happen.
Right. Yeah, or that, yeah, that they do have a big trouble. And there's the other argument that this is something that should be done on the federal level.
And of course, Rauner does not need to win the African-American vote, right? He just needs to win enough to hurt Governor Quinn's performance in the city of Chicago and the surrounding areas where African Americans are a key constituency. And he has been working hard. He's been going to neighborhoods and marching in parades in those areas. He deposited, what, $800,000, almost $1 million of his own money in a in an African American credit union in the South Suburbs. And he has, you know, gotten the support of a former state senator and a popular preacher in that area, James Meeks. So he just needs to win a little bit. I think Charlie would know better than I would. Was it 20% of the vote in Chicago typically?
Yeah, that's usually what they set as the goal. They say that if you're a Republican statewide candidate and you can pick up 20% of the black vote in Chicago, you should be okay. And conversely, if you're a Democrat and you don't get 80% or higher, you're going to be in trouble.
You're listening to State Week in Review. Coming up, we'll review some of the other issues and news of the week.
Support for State Week in Review comes from Illinois Issues Magazine, a public affairs magazine deciphering Springfield legislation and the state of the state. This month's features include ad wars and the race for the governor's mansion, also the problems with political polling. Illinois Issues and its companion publication, The Roster of State Government Officials, is available at illinoisissues.uis.edu.
Our panel on State Week, Charlie Wheeler, Brian Mackey, and the Associated Press's John O'Connor. I'm Bill Wheelhouse. We'll go over some of the other items that popped up in the news this week. Related to that campaign, quarterly spending reports were completed this past round, and it showed that Quinn and Rauner combined to spend $21 million on TV and radio ads between July through September. Charlie Wheeler, is that number, while it seems like a large number, is that any surprise to you?
No, it's not really a surprise, and it is a huge number. I was looking up Kent Redfield, Professor Emeritus here and the state's foremost authority on campaign finance, came and spoke to one of my classes a couple weeks ago, and he had prepared a rack-up of all the spending looking at past gubernatorial elections. And the thing that stood out to me is that Bruce Rauner, out of his own pocket, has contributed to his campaign more than both candidates for governor 20 years ago spent on their entire campaigns. Jim Edgar, the Republican incumbent, the Democrat Don Clark Netsch, who then was state comptroller. Between them, they spent less than Rauner has put into his campaign out of his own pocket. And this race for governor will break all, it'll probably be half again or more as high spending as any governor's race in the history of Illinois.
And we've seen some expensive ones in recent years with Rod Blagojevich, who's a prolific fundraiser.
Yeah, and they're going to make Blagojevich look like a piker.
And we should add that this was going to be the first campaign that would have had caps on contributions, federal-style caps here in Illinois, but because they put in a pressure relief valve, if you will, that if a very wealthy person did decide to run for office, as we've seen in the past in Illinois, and broke a certain spending threshold, which I believe is $250,000, that those caps would be removed and anyone could donate any amount. So not only is Rauner given himself, as of this recording, more than $17 million, help me out with his name, the richest man in Illinois, Ken Griffin, thank you, has also given millions and millions of dollars to the Rauner campaign. We've seen organized labor stepping up big time for Governor Quinn. We've seen the national Republican and Democratic Governors Associations. That's two separate associations, the Republican Governors Association and the Democratic Governors Association, have both sent people and money in. We've seen President Barack Obama come into town to do fundraisers, as well as Michelle Obama and Hillary Clinton, and I guess Bill Clinton is going to be coming now, and Vice President Joe Biden. Governor Chris Christie has come in on the Republican side for Bruce Rauner from New Jersey. The people are really going all out. This is getting a lot of national attention, too.
What is the importance of a Democrat winning to President Obama in an off-year election that he would spend this much time trying to get a Democrat elected, Charlie?
Well, I think it's basically that this is Obama's home state, and it would be a big embarrassment for him. A state that, however you slice it, is Democratic-leaning, for a Republican to come in and win the governorship in his home state. So I think it's a matter of pride and prestige is why he's involved in it. The reason the labor unions are involved in it is because they see Bruce Rauner as almost an existential threat with the positions he's staked out, the talk about doing away with collective bargaining, a la Scott Walker in Wisconsin, and they're just very afraid of him. And they're not very happy with Pat Quinn because of that so-called pension reform. But on the other hand, the devil you know is better than the devil you don't, I guess.
I don't think anyone would be surprised to learn, or if we did learn at some point, I'm not saying we know this, but would be surprised to learn that Bruce Rauner has ambitions beyond the Illinois governor's mansion. But I also think that President Obama is in this position where he's not wanted in a lot of places in America to campaign right now. And when he's been invited here numerous times, maybe it feels good. I mean, I'm just speculating here, but I mean, there are so many candidates, there are so many districts, congressional districts around the country and states where senators are running that President Obama is a negative on campaigning, that maybe it's nice to come to a place where you can still get cheering crowds.
I think
well,
that
and
is
and part of it is
of it.
A lot of the U.S. Senate seats that are in states that did not go for President Obama 2 years ago anyway. And so there's little, what would you say, little incentive for him to go somewhere where he was rejected 2 years ago and where his presence could only hurt the Democratic candidate. Whereas here, he'll help gin up the base of support, as we were talking about earlier, particularly in the African-American community, that Democratic candidates are going to need.
We have a couple of minutes remaining. Another education issue. The Illinois State Board of Education released stats this week that now show more than half the students in the state are considered low income. 51.5% of all public school students are considered low income. I'll throw this one out to the panel. What do you take from that number? What's that mean down the road?
Well, basically, it's a demographic change. Charlie's written at length about the demographic changes in Illinois, that difference in ethnicities, that the changes in that way. In terms of the low income, what we see is, and I don't know how you ever get around this, is the way that school districts were drawn a century and more ago, that there is no expansion for a school district contiguous to, say, a city limit line. So in Springfield, for example, you have a great deal of building out west, new, very expensive homes, and a lot of migration out west. Well, those are Springfield addresses, but not in the Springfield School District. They're in surrounding school districts. And the realtors sell them that way. Springfield address, Pleasant Plains School District. And so it's kind of a new white flight. And what's left in the inner core cities, Peoria, Rockford, Bloomington, Springfield, are poor minorities and no way to draw on any new revenue, new tax base from the building that's going on within the city limits but outside the school district.
And that's our time for this edition of State Week. Thanks to our guest John O'Connor of the Associated Press, and production assistance for our program today provided by Brian Mackey and Bob Meyer. I'm Bill Wheelhouse.
You've been listening to State Week in Review, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week in Review is produced in the state capitol by public radio station WUIS. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.